You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Dorothy Mae Schroeder Tall, and I was born on May 28th, 1941. I was born in Los Angeles, California.
Dorothy Tall is a beautiful, vivacious, caring woman. She is the mother of five children and has been married to her sweetheart Tom for 58 years. She has devoted her life to her family and her faith in God. She had an incredible career as an elementary school teacher and balanced her job with raising her kids. She's the daughter of German immigrants and had a very happy childhood. We'll begin her story there.
When I was about 2 years old, we moved to a new home in Southgate, California, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. And I lived there from my age of two until I was married in 1965. My spouse's name is Thomas Melvin Tall. We call him Tom. And I have five children: Michael Thomas Tall, Matthew Nelson Tall, Michelle Elizabeth Tall, Martin James Tall, and Megan Alyssa Tall. I have about 16 grandchildren. They're all wonderful. I love them all. I came early on May 28. I was supposed to have been born in June, so my name would have been June Schroeder, which I think I would have preferred because I don't like my name, Dorothy. And so because I don't like Dorothy, I just told everyone my name was Dorothy, and I tried to say it as fast as I could because I didn't like it. And that has followed me through my whole life. But my mother always called me Mayla. That's my middle name, is May, because I was supposed to be born in June, but I was born in May, so May became my middle name, and at home, I was Mayla. I came from such a loving, kind home. I had one brother, Leonard, who was 10 years older than me, and one sister, Eleanor, who was 8 years older than me. My brother paid attention to me, and I loved him. He was an Eagle Scout, and I looked up to him. He taught me how to play chess. He played with me so many times, and of course, I would lose, and maybe that's why he liked playing with me. He made a bow and arrow for me once so that I could shoot at a target in our backyard, and he always let me see his model planes and ships that he built out of balsa wood. I believed, and I think he could, fix anything. He would take me many places and showed me interesting things. He took me to an aquarium in Hermosa Beach when I was little. He took me to UCLA to walk around the campus and to Caltech to visit his friends who were attending that university. He took me and his girlfriend, Neva, who later became his wife, to Mount Palomar to see the huge telescope there. His wife, Neva, was wonderful in every way, and I loved her. After my parents had moved to Southgate, he was instrumental in finding where the Southgate ward was located and began attending and got my parents and sister and I to attend. My mother and father rarely left. They did once in a while because my brother and sister were there to watch me. So the minute they would leave, my brother would tease my sister. And in the olden days, you'd take a tea towel that you wipe the dishes with and you'd flip it and flip each other, and everybody'd be flipping each other and laughing, and you're it, and running around. And our house was one where you could really run around in a circle through the living room, through the hallway, through the back porch, through the kitchen, through the dining room, back through the living room and around again. And so when we started chasing each other, my brother would always say, "Be on my side." My sister said, "No, be on my side." And I'd always choose my brother over my sister. And then I'd run into my sister and I'd grab her and I'd say, "I've got her. I've got her, Leonard. I've got her." And we'd keep doing that. And all of a sudden, because of the old car we had, you could hear it coming in the driveway. "They're home." And we'd run and we'd straighten out the rugs and we'd push the table where it belonged and the pillows where they belonged, and everything we'd knocked over was put back. And then we'd just be real quiet when they came in the house. "Hi, Mom and Dad." And that's how we were. That was the worst we did. My sister Eleanor was beautiful. She had many friends and was a ramblerette. She was on the drill team at Southgate High School. She wore white boots with tassels and a short black and red skirt and made her pom-poms at home. I would watch her how she did it, and I learned how to do it too. She took piano lessons. I always wanted to look like her. We were very different, not only in looks, but personalities. She was and is very methodical. She's neat and tidy and cooks strictly from recipes, and she makes the best pie crust ever. I, on the other hand, was a bit of a tomboy and loved playing kickball, baseball, hopscotch, tag, anything outdoors. I remember one time I must have been in the third grade. Well, I was certainly old enough to complete a task. My sister said to me, "I will vacuum the whole house and you are to dust the living room." And I said, "Okay." And I started to do my job. I began with the end table in the living room, and I removed all the articles on top, such as the lamp and the books and the magazines on the shelf below, because at our house, you took everything off and shook the doily outside before coming in and wiping with the dust rag to make sure all the dust was gone. So I dusted it all, and then I noticed that there were some very interesting magazines that I was wiping down with the dust rag and putting back that needed reading as well as dusting. So that is what I did. I just started looking through them and became engaged in reading when suddenly my sister came into the room and said, "What are you doing? I have vacuumed all the bedrooms, including under the beds, the hallway, and ready to do the living room, and you are just sitting here getting nothing done." I really don't remember her ever asking me to do housework with her again. I remember once she played teacher with me and some of my little friends from the neighborhood at my house. I must have been in first grade. She drew some bananas on a piece of paper to teach us how to add. She drew two bananas, wrote the numeral 2 underneath, and then a big plus sign, and drew one banana with the numeral 1 under it, and then an equal sign next to it. And she asked us if we had two bananas, and someone would give us one more, pointing to her illustrations as she spoke, how many would we have altogether? We were all so smart and gave her the correct answer of 3. Then she would do more similar problems. I loved that, and I loved any attention she would give to me. But when I was 5 years old, she was 13 and busy being a teenager and spending most of her time with her girlfriends. Of course, I wanted to tag along too, but hey, you want this little kid tagging along with you when you were a teenager? I don't think so. I understand it now. But I missed her, and I wished I'd had more time with her. She married when she was only 17, but she turned 18 2 months later. She was married for over 60 years and has had a wonderful family and many beautiful children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Who would expect anything else from someone who is so methodical? My mother was an outstanding homemaker who did seamstress work for a short period of time. And she took in ironing also for a short period of time. This is when they had little fluffy dresses with a million ruffles and a million pieces of lace and layers of it. And she was a great ironer and everyone would bring it to her, but she didn't do it too long. It was very taxing. She wanted me to be such a little lady, and I was anything but. I remember one Christmas getting a Betsy Wetsy doll. Yep, that was popular then. You gave it a doll baby bottle filled with water, and the water would come out of a hole in its bottom. After 2 or 3 times of feeding it a bottle of water, I didn't do it anymore because I didn't like to clean up the water afterwards. It didn't all just come out all at once. It would keep on dribbling, so you had to wipe it down. Then you'd get it dressed, and it would leak water, and you'd have to take off the clothes and wipe it up and do it again once more, and it kept leaking water. So I only think I fed it to maybe 2 or 3 times. I didn't like it. I was really quite lazy. At that Christmas time when I got the Betsy Wetsy doll, I got a buggy with it. So instead of taking my doll for a walk in the buggy, I would go outside, take it out of the buggy, hold it by the hand, and swing it around and around and around and around and around. I loved swinging around and around and around. I was thinking I was giving her a fun ride. I was quite the tomboy, my poor mom. One night, I felt so sick I thought I would throw up. The feeling woke me up, and I got out of bed, and I went into the living room where my mother and others were talking. She put me on her lap and patted me on my back. And after a while, I felt better, and then I went back to bed to sleep. I always remember that, the comfort she gave me. She was a comforter. I love her with all my heart. As in the old 1989 movie, Peggy Sue Got Married, I wish sometimes I could go back in time knowing what I do now and be a better daughter to her. She never left me. In fact, when I went to kindergarten, and I was really excited to go to kindergarten, and then I saw my mother leaving, and I started to cry. I was one of those that cry because my mother never left me. She was home all the time, or I was with her all the time. And so when I saw her leave, I really thought in my mind, in kindergarten, I'd never see her again for some reason. And I remember my mother saying, the teacher said, "Now, Mrs. Schroeder, don't worry. Your daughter's going to be just fine. If you'll just leave, she'll be fine." And you know what? I was after that. I don't know how it works out, but I found there were blocks to play with and kids to play with and things to do, and had a lot of fun in kindergarten. My mother was so intelligent and strong in the gospel of Jesus Christ. She was a good pianist, a homemaker. She cooked wonderful meals, baked delicious breads and sweets. She kept an immaculate house and was loving and kind and rarely gave advice. And when she did, it was the very best advice. I could go on forever about my wonderful mother. I came from such a loving, kind home. My mother and dad were born in Germany. I am forever grateful that she joined the church with her family in Germany, came to America in the late 1920s when she was just 19 years old, and married my father in the Salt Lake Temple. What a blessing. Mother was the oldest of four children. She had a younger sister, 2 years younger, and twin brothers, 2 years younger than that. During World War I, her father, Louis Lenhardt, contracted tuberculosis. And he died, and my mother's mother, Johanna, was so distraught that he was gone. First of all, in those days, this was back in, 1914, 15, it was hard for women to find work, and she did. She was very smart, and she got a very good job in a company. And so she had to raise my mother and my mother's sister, Dora and Gertrude, and her twin brothers, Kurt and Walter. And at that time, the whole family was distraught. They were absolutely in despair. And I remember, my mother said, I remember the pastor coming to our house and saying to my mom, "Johanna, everything's going to be fine." And Johanna said, "All I want to know is if I'll ever see Louis again." She loved him so. And the pastor patted her hand and said, "Johanna, we like to think so." And that just did not satisfy my grandmother at all. And so one day my mother told me that her mother decided to go to this little church her girlfriend had been wanting her to go to for a long time, and she just didn't go because she was Lutheran, so she wouldn't go to that other church. But she was so distraught with the pastor's answer that she decided to go to that church. And my mother says, "I remember we were all dressed in black with black armbands. I mean, that was just what you did when you were in mourning." And she said my mother had a hat with a black veil. They walked into that church. My mother said to me, "Dorothy, I don't know what they said in the meeting. I can't tell you what it was about. But the first time since my father's death, I felt peace and a warm feeling from my toes to my head covered me with warmth and love and comfort." She said, "It was the most wonderful feeling I have ever had." And she said, afterwards, we marched right up. And my mother's girlfriend said, "Johanna, you're here." And Johanna marched right up to her and said, "Okay, all I want to know is, will I see Louis again?" And of course, you know the answer if you're a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. After that, they were baptized and became members of the church. My mother played the organ in Germany at the ward house, and that is where my father met her. My father's father was so sick of war. It was right after World War I, and he was so sick of war. And my father was a little boy during World War I, and he remembers going to bed hungry, so hungry, and he never wanted to be hungry again. And so his father was out looking and came across a pamphlet that said Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and where to find the meeting. And it just struck him, yes. And he went to the meeting, and he was absolutely, immediately, he joined the church. He knew it was true. And my father, Richard Schroeder, he had a brother and four sisters and his mother, and they all went to church. But the only one who stayed active and the only one who really joined was my father and his father, the one who saw the pamphlet. And so when my father, he always loved American stories about the Indians and everything. He was wanting to come to America so badly. So when my father turned 18, he met my mother at church, thought she was beautiful. They became engaged. And so my father said, I'm going to go to America, and then you come a year later and we'll be married in the Salt Lake Temple. And that's exactly what happened. He was about 19 when he came to America. When she turned 19, she came to America, and they were married in the Salt Lake Temple. And my sister Eleanor and I have often said to each other, we were so blessed. We were so blessed that our parents joined the church. Can't you imagine what might have happened had they not? What a joy it has been to be born in this free land of America. And my father never let us forget it. Every time we would eat dinner or anything, he said, isn't this wonderful? We live in a free country, and there's more food in the kitchen if you want it. Because living under a dictatorship, he knew what it was like not to have food in the kitchen or even at the table. So Eleanor and I, and Leonard too, we were all very grateful for our parents, so thankful to be born in the United States. In fact, I felt like I was an American. I never felt German or anything, and I don't know how I learned the language. It's like one day you wake up and you're just speaking two different languages. That's how it is with me. I never had to learn English. I think it's because my brother, being 10 years older, and sister, 8 years older, they spoke English to me. I am sure they did. Well, my parents always spoke German. So we had a language of half German, half English in the home. But what a blessing to know another language, and how grateful I am. I was born in 1941, as I said, and that's when the horrible World War II began and horrible things happened. And as a baby, you don't know anything about it. And you turn 4 years old, it's 1945, and the war is over. And all you know that there is a war. And you say, when you're about 6 years old or 5, you hear people talking war. And I'd say to my mother, war? What war? Who's having a war? And she says, the United States was in a war. Oh, who are we fighting? And she said, Germany. And I, Germany? Well, oh, and then we just never talked more about it. And growing older, it was an embarrassment to me to be German. It was hard because I was embarrassed. I felt horrible for the horrors that were done by one man that influenced evilness in others. I'm grateful to be an American. So was my father. He loved America with all his heart. And my mother and my sister and brother. There were a lot of little children in my neighborhood. I think we were pretty national. There was Diane Kelly. She was Irish. I was German, of course. There was Barbara Bessage. There was Dolores Anizeski, probably from Poland. There was Helen Driscoll, and she was the Elizabeth Taylor of the neighborhood. She was so beautiful, and we were little kids. And she was such a pretty girl and so nice. And we played hopscotch. We played baseball outside. We played until dark, till our parents' time to come in. And it was fun, and we made up stories. We watched, television was just barely coming in, and we would watch this series. It was done live in California, so no one ever heard of it, called Space Patrol. No one in any other state that I know heard of it, but LA children saw it, and it was Space Patrol with Tonga and all these interesting characters. And then when we go play, I would be Tonga or someone would be someone else. We'd pretend those stories out in the yard at night, in the evening, in the summer. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful time to be alive. I remember one of the favorite things we did as a family, we would drive every Sunday after church, we'd go around and see different parts of Southern California, Los Angeles area, Ferndale's beautiful. Griffith Park was wonderful. We'd go to the airport and park. There was hardly anything there at the Los Angeles airport, just one building. And I remember we'd watch the planes coming in, and those were the prop planes. And it was so interesting. And wow, as it zoom over your head, that was so exciting. And we went to Santa Monica and up to where Malibu is now. It was all so open. There weren't homes, that many homes there. You could just go on the beach at Malibu and in Santa Monica, and we'd drive through the Hollywood Hills. We'd go through West Hollywood, and we'd go to Long Beach a lot when I was a little girl. And the kids were in school, and my mother would take me on the bus, and we were only like 13 miles from Long Beach. So we'd get on the bus and go down Long Beach Boulevard to Long Beach. And then I remember running across the sand, couldn't wait to get into the water and go swimming. And then it was time to go home. So we'd get out and get back on the bus and go home in time for my mother to have dinner ready for everyone. We ate dinner together every night, as it was in the olden days. And it was a wonderful time because you'd visit and talk.
Dorothy's lovely upbringing continued with her teenage years in Southern California.
I loved elementary school. When I went into junior high, it was a different world. Puberty hits and everything changes and things aren't as they were, it doesn't seem. And I loved volleyball. And I think high school for me was a lot more fun than junior high. I was older and it was fun. Boys were fun and dating was fun. And I enjoyed school. And yes, I became a ramblerette on the drill team. But in our day, we didn't wear the pretty white boots with tassels. We wore, I guess, tennis shoes, white tennis shoes. And our clothes weren't quite as fantastic as I had pictured my sister wearing, but it was okay. I had my pom-poms and off I went. I loved football. I loved watching it and cheering for it. And I loved my high school. I graduated from high school in February of 1959. I was a winter class. They call it a winter class. So I had from February to September to work so that I could earn money. I wanted to go to Brigham Young University. That was my goal. I tried out for a job, but I was only 17. In California, you graduate from high school when you're 17 years old. And they wouldn't hire me because I wasn't 18 yet. And I remember feeling really sad. I felt so bad for myself because they wouldn't hire me. But I finally got a job at Holmes & Narver Engineering Corporation in Los Angeles as a secretary, clerk, typist type job. And it was wonderful. And I was able to work there until school started in the fall. Then I went to Brigham Young University.
Dorothy thoroughly enjoyed her time at BYU and studied elementary education with a minor in German.
I cannot tell you how good it felt to me to be there among so many that were members of the Church of Jesus Christ. I felt very much at home at Brigham Young University. It was a beautiful university. Everything was so new and clean. And I was lucky to have two girls from California, that one was in my grade level, Linda Slack and Patty Hudson, who was a half a year behind me in school. And we all went to BYU that fall together and stayed in Amanda Knight Hall, which I thought was collegiate looking, changed my mind. The next year, we all lived in Helaman Halls, which was almost brand new, about the second year it was built, and loved it there.
Upon graduating, Dorothy headed back to Southern California to begin her career as a teacher.
My first year of teaching, as I said, was in the Lowell Joint School District at El Portal School. And when I first got there, the principal said to me, "Now, I just want you to know, I want all the teachers to know that this school was built on a bed of black widows. So you'll find a lot of black widows. So just be prepared and be wary." So I was real grateful when a girlfriend of mine came with me to clean up the room and get my room ready for teaching, that she would reach in and check all the covers for me, because boy, was I a wuss. So anyway, taught that first year and loved the children.
It was around this time that she was introduced to a man named Tom Tall.
Carolyn Croxton, who was my roommate The last 2 years I was at Brigham Young University. She lived in Sherman Oaks, California, and I was teaching school in La Habra, East Whittier, but I still lived at my parents' home. And Carolyn said, "I'm having a group over at my house, boys and girls, young men and women. Why don't you come? It'll be fun. We're going to go see a play in the Circle Theater here in the Valley, and Anna Maria Alberghetti has the lead role of West Side Story. So come on." And I said, "Okay, I will." So I went over to her house, and there were quite a few there. And they were all girls. Me and all girls, I was expecting, oh, maybe I could meet a guy, you know, ha-ha. And here comes Tom, and he's sitting there. And so we're all having some dinner before, not thinking much, just visiting. But then I noticed how he felt very comfortable with all these girls around him, where most guys, you know, hey, you know, I can't handle women talk. But he just visited with every one of them and talked. And I thought, wow, that is a wonderful attribute. I really like that, that he's comfortable and can talk to everyone. And he's nice. I quite like him. He's a nice person. Get to know him a little more. And so when we went to the play, I really wanted to sit next to him. And I don't know how I did it, but I did. I sat next to him. And so we were watching the play, and there were some things we laughed at and talked about. And I looked, and he looked at me. We laughed and talked about it. And afterwards, years later, I said, "Remember when I was reminiscing about this?" And he says, "I don't remember that." And I thought, oh, brother. So anyway, as it turned out, he asked me out and we dated, and didn't take long. It just seemed so right. And there were some hiccups that happens in life, and I wasn't sure. And then he was not sure. And then we both were sure, and back and forth. And finally, we got married on July 30th, 1965. And it was a beautiful wedding. I was so excited about my dress. It was all about me. And I found this dress at a bridal shop, and it had been a Cahill of Beverly Hills, and they used it for people to try on to order, and they were going to sell it. So I bought it at a really good price, because I don't know, maybe there is no more Cahill of Beverly Hills, but it sounded very exclusive to me. So I bought it and had it cleaned and fixed it up, and it looked really nice. And I was really excited that we were getting married in the Los Angeles Temple. We had my mother and dad, of course, and Tom's parents, and my Aunt Gertrude, and my brother and sisters and in-laws, and had a nice family there at the temple for our wedding in Los Angeles. It was a beautiful day, sunny and lovely in July, very hot. And we got up very early, did the whole, never had been to the temple before. So in those days, you just did everything in one day. By the time you came out, our head was swimming and we were tired, and we still had the reception to do in the evening. So we did the reception, and a lot of wonderful people came, and it was wonderful to see them. But I was getting married, so I was in La La Land. And then Tom and I left on our honeymoon. We spent a night in Malibu at a hotel. It was wonderful because we were so dead tired. I'm surprised we made it that far. And then we spent our honeymoon going up the coast of California to San Simeon Hotel and on up to San Francisco. We saw My Fair Lady, and we just had a honeymoon and came back home, and then reality starts, and there you are and doing things you should do. I had to get a new job. I could no longer teach at El Portal and East Whittier, La Habra. The only school I could teach at was in the Los Angeles School District. We lived in North Hollywood, Studio City area, an amazing place. And in the Valley, there was one area that was all Black, inclusive Black. And so that's where I taught school, an all Black school. And these children were wonderful. I loved them. I wanted to take them home. And when I would get there early in the morning, these little elementary kids would, some of them would already be there because they're both their parents worked. And I'll always remember them. Always will. I love them. I remember little Jolene. "When I grow up, Miss Tall, I'm going to be a supreme. I want to be a supreme, Miss Tall." And Miss Tall, "Dini's peeing on the wall again outside in the schoolyard." Little boys are fun that way, fourth grade. I still hear Claudie Shanks, little Claudie, what a darling. "Miss Tall, we moved to a new home, and guess what?" "What, Claudie?" "There are no broken windows." And I said, "Oh, Claudie, I'm so glad." And I'd say to them, "Now, you all need to get a good education. That is very important in life. You all need to study hard in school and do your best." When I left after the second year, Deanie was the one that came out to the parking lot to wave to me, and it tore my heart too a little. I love those children very much. Tom and I didn't have our own family yet, and I would have loved to have taken some of them home. In California, they had year-round, and they had 3 weeks off throughout the year when school wasn't. So what do parents do who both work? Well, the school offered for 1 week that they could come to the school, and it was wonderful. I mean, I taught the fourth, fifth, and sixth. They were all in one group, and then the other girl taught first, second, third, and we went on field trips. That's all we did. It was called Around the World in 5 days. And we went downtown to the Buddhist temple down there and talked about Buddhism. And then we drove to Solvang, which is a long way past Malibu up there, and went to the Danish village, had Abel Skevers, and talked about that. And then I had a Japanese woman come to the classroom and dress me in a kimono. I mean, these kids know the world in 1 week. And I loved it. And as I think of it now, in all my years I've had of teaching since, I think, oh, I could have done more. But I think we always do that. I could have done more. I could have taught more. I could have been a better teacher in teaching them more things. But I know one thing is that I loved them and they loved me. Elementary education is not for the weak of heart or people who don't really want to teach. It really takes some who want and love the children and want them to learn something and do their best. So Tom and I lived in North Hollywood, Studio City, California, right after we got married. And because of his job, we moved to Arizona from the fall to about January. So I taught school there at three different schools. And then his job transferred us to San Diego. So I taught school from January, February to the end of the school year in San Diego. In the meantime, he decided to change jobs again and became a stockbroker in Los Angeles. So we moved back to the Studio City area, and our first son was born there, Michael Thomas Tall, on November 13th, 1968. We were so thrilled and grateful for our beautiful baby boy, our very first. Matthew Nelson Tall was born on March 9th, 1970. Same doctor I had for Michael, even though we moved all over the place. We went to Glendale to have my babies. While we were there on Winterdale Court in Saugus, in 1971, the huge Sillmore 6.6 earthquake hit. It hit very early in the morning, and I remember being in bed and trying to get out of bed to check on the boys. I couldn't. It was shaking so violently. I finally was able to make it to their room, and there they were, fast asleep in their cribs. That rock must have rocked them right to sleep. It was quite a big earthquake, very scary. And while we lived there for a few years, we experienced it all. Fires. I remember hearing, "Prepare to evacuate." And I looked out. The fire had jumped the highway and was right behind the homes behind us. You could see the flames. And Tom decided to get on the roof and wet our house roof that we were renting with water. But then he came down and it passed and we were okay. We also had a flood there. The flood came and it was so heavy and so strong, it took out the main bridge. So it really said to me, do you think you ought to be prepared? And I think I should be. After a couple of years, Tom asked what I thought about him finishing his degree at Brigham Young University. I said an emphatic yes. So I took the necessary classes at Northridge University to be able to renew my Utah teaching certificate. My father and mother would push the boys in their strollers as they walked around campus while I was in class. I'm so grateful for their help and love. We moved to Provo and rented a lovely three-bedroom house. The boys were so little. I taught third grade in Pleasant Grove. I would drop the boys off at the babysitter for the day and just wishing for the time when I could be with them all day long. The babysitter had guinea pigs, and she was teaching Michael that the mother guinea pig was going to have babies any day. So Michael saw the little baby guinea pigs, thought that was pretty exciting. Then the woman said to her, "Look, I'm pregnant," and she showed Mike her tummy. And so Michael said to her, "Are you going to have guinea pigs?" Matthew, my little Matthew, was always gone. He was barely two, and he was off on the tricycle. We had a little orange tricycle. If I went shopping with him and I had him with me, Michael would be with me. I'd turn around and Matthew would be gone. And I'd search the store, my stomach dropping to my feet, worried about him. And there I'd find him down some other aisle doing something else. He would always scare me. Well, one day he took off on his little orange tricycle. I looked out the window and sure enough, he was gone. Panic set in. I looked all over for him, up and down the streets, sick in my heart. And someone mentioned they thought they saw him heading for 9th East, which is a very busy street in Provo. So I ran and I found him riding his little trike by a strip mall there. He was probably ready to go into a store. I was just so relieved and grateful to grab him and hug him and tell him, "Now don't you do this again." He was that kind of a kid, always gone, always doing. My parents drove from California to visit us. They would take my boys for the day while I worked and Tom was at school. They would drive by the Provo River, and my mother said they'd always say, "Oh, look, boys, look, Matthew, there's the river." And Matthew would say, "River, river, there's always river, always river." He was so bored being in the car. And ironically, Matthew's my son who loves fly fishing, and he's done it on the Provo River. Mike couldn't say Matthew's name, so he called him Gagu. I get it, Matthew, Gagu. For little kids, hard to talk, sure. And then Matt called Mike Oni-Oni. Well, I never did figure that one out. So they were Gagu and Oni-Oni. Matthew could not say his R, so they became W's instead. And we just thought that was so cute. We lived right across from the Kiwanis Park in Provo. And so I would take them there. And they had bars and swings. And so I remember I thought I'd take a picture of these two little kids. And so I put them on a bar and I said, "Now don't let go." And then I took a picture of them. I'm so glad they didn't let go. It'd have been a long fall. What a mother I was. But I still have that picture and I treasure it. They were so, so cute. And I just wanted to be with them every minute. After 2 years, Tom graduated. We loved Provo, Tom and I. We loved the sports there, the activities that the university provided. We wanted to stay in Provo after he graduated, but we couldn't because the jobs weren't there that he wanted. And so we moved back to California to a different part of the Santa Clarita Valley, this time called Newhall. And that is when our daughter, Michelle, was born on March 26, 1974. How blessed we were to have two wonderful boys and now a beautiful little girl. She took a little longer to be born, and the doctor said it was because she was at the beauty parlor having her hair frosted. That's what they called it in those days, you know, blonde on the ends. She was gorgeous, her hair just beautiful. Michelle was so smart. I just loved her. She loved reading and excelled in school. We would always play games, a match game, and she was only 3 years old. I was so proud of her. She could play it and could find all the matches. She was such a joy to me. We were living a really happy life. Tom had a wonderful job that paid well, and we were living in the first home we ever bought, 5 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, family room. We had a swimming pool built then. Tom had a wonderful garden with lots of tomatoes in it. We had a pergola built over our patio. The only problem was that Tom was gone for weeks at a time with his job, sometimes 2 weeks and one weekend in a row. I remember dressing the children up for Halloween one year, wishing Tom was there to see them. Michael and Matthew were busy too. Tom bought them some bikes and they loved their bikes. Plus, he got them some dirt bikes, motorbikes. And one day, Matthew was injured really badly and Tom was very upset, but somehow he came out of that too. All these things that happen to children and you worry and you hope nothing happens and then it does and you live through it. Our son Michael, he was playing basketball one day and the standard came down on top of him and really hurt him badly, but he lived through that. And then Matthew, our son, He joined a track team and was running track. And one day, I guess I had too many children or my brain was somewhere. And he walked home from that track meet, and it wasn't around the corner. Believe me, it was a long way off in Valencia. And he had to walk all the way back to Newhall and up this highway all by himself. Luckily, there was a family that saw him walking. They knew who he was and took him home to me. I was so embarrassed, but I think the Lord watches out for us when we kind of forget things or are too busy. On December 17th of 1975, our son, Martin James Tall, was born. He was a beautiful little boy. When he was born, the doctor said, "Dorothy, we have a little problem here. I'm afraid he has a cleft lip and a palate, and it's pretty far back in his mouth." And my heart just sunk to the ground. Oh, no, what do I do? So it was the first time my husband, Tom, could be with me during the birth. And so he was behind me, and he started to cry. And Tom didn't cry a lot in his life. And I said a prayer. And the prayer I said was, "Heavenly Father, please help me and help Tom to know what to do. And bless Tom that he isn't so sad, that he can be okay, and that we will know what to do for our sweet baby." And then he left. And all of a sudden, a warmth came over me from my toes to my head, just the most comforting, warm feeling. And in my mind, I heard as loud and clear as if Tom had been talking to me, "Everything is going to be just fine. Everything is going to be just fine," over at least two or three times over and over. And I felt that. And I was comforted. And I knew who gave me that comfort. It was the Holy Ghost. So when I went to the room that night, the doctor came in, and I remember him taking my hand, and he said, "Dorothy, we don't know why these things happen, but they do, and it's nobody's fault." And I know he was trying to comfort me, and I wanted to say to him, "Oh, don't worry, Dr. McInich. I feel fine. Everything's going to be just fine." The support I had after Marty's birth was incredible. So this wonderful gentleman, a pediatrician, came in and talked to me and gave me all the steps and all the things that he was going to do for Marty. And that was just so encouraging, along with the feeling that just didn't leave me. It was still with me. And so this was on the 17th of December. And so that Christmas was a special Christmas for me. My husband, Tom, he showed our sons and daughter pictures of what children look like with cleft lips and palates. And so when we came home to show the children the baby Marty. And Matthew said, "Oh, he's beautiful. He's a beautiful baby." I said, "Yes, he is." And he was. He was tow-headed, beautiful white hair and prettiest blue eyes. He was the cutest little boy. He got the treatments he needed to put his lip together and to put his palate together. But his palate was one of the worst. And Marty was such a cute little boy and very active and very good in sports. But he did have a temper. I remember him running after Michelle. He loved his sister, Michelle, and he was just little, and he was going to let her have it. And she was running, and I heard her, so I ran after him down the hallway, and she ducked into her room, and he ran right into the door frame and got a big goose egg. And I said, "Okay, Marty, that's what happens when you're naughty. You don't do that to Michelle anymore." And he was a smart boy. When he was in kindergarten, he was in braces until he was in high school. In high school, three men in my ward came to my house, and they said, "We're over the young man, and we were watching him play basketball, and your son needs some help." And one of them was an orthodontist. The other one was a regular doctor, and the other one was an oral surgeon. And they said, "He needs help, and we can get him ready so that when he's graduating, he'll just look so great, and when he decides to go on a mission." And they did. They took care of him. Boy, was he buff in high school, I'll tell you. We would go to Lake Powell, and he'd be on that ski and doing such a great job, and he had such a nice physique. Marty really was a good-looking boy, and even though the little children in Utah in our ward would ditch him a lot and make fun of him, he somehow got a thicker skin and worked through that and became the wonderful man he is now. On February 3rd, 1979, our last child, Megan Alyssa Tall, was born. What a beauty. And she was a go-getter too, always doing things and going, moving around. She was about 1 1/2, and I had such a feeling. I was working in the house, and I had a feeling to look out my back window, and there she was somehow, had opened the gate and was heading for the pool. And so I hollered to Michelle. I says, "Michelle, grab Megan." And so Michelle did. She was like another mother, and little Michelle wasn't all that old either. She must have been in about the first grade at the time. So she grabbed Megan and held her till I got down there, and everything turned out well.
Eventually, the Tall family made a big move from California to Utah.
Well, the company moved us to Utah because we always wanted to come back. We loved Utah, and we thought Provo was the place. But when we came back to look around, it just wasn't the same as when we were younger, and it just seemed different to us. So we looked around in Salt Lake instead. And I had a home all picked out in the Willow Creek area of Cottonwood Heights. And I thought, this is great. Huge home, beautiful new home. And Tom said, "Well, I have one I want you to look at before we do this one." And I thought, okay. So I looked at the home that we're presently in, and it was not as big. And yet there was something that just said, yes. And I know now why, because the neighborhood and the neighbors I live with are just wonderful. And I've had such dear friends here, and it was good for us. But we told the children we were moving, and our oldest, he was in middle school and loving every moment of it with lots of friends. And so we took a little trip through Colorado and then into Utah to show him a summer trip. I ended up driving the camper back home to Utah. And about the time we get to Las Vegas, my daughter Michelle, love her, said, "It smells like popcorn." I thought, uh-oh. So I went into the very first gas station I get, and sure enough, we needed water. It was a radiator. So luckily, I waited for it to cool, and we filled it with water, and were able to get home. When we moved here, Michael was in 9th, Matthew was in 8th, Michelle was in 2nd grade, Marty was in kindergarten, and Megan was 2 1/2. As I said, it wasn't an easy move for the children. When we first moved here, I had an opportunity to have Michelle take ballet lessons. I was so excited for her because it's always something I wanted to do as a child, but she hated it. So I didn't make her continue, but not until after she performed in a program. She was wonderful. Living here turned out okay after all. The children learned to snow ski, and the boys joined a club called the Thin Air Boys, and they did a lot of skiing. But the bad thing is, sometimes they would go where they weren't supposed to go. They built their own jumps, and one day Michael was riding up with his friends in the ski lift, and they're talking to him, and they say, uh-oh. So they ended up bringing Michael back down. He had a concussion. He wasn't making sense. So they took him to the emergency hospital. So all these fun things. Marty, the youngest, loves to snowboard. That's his favorite. Our summers are spent at Lake Powell. They loved water skiing. They loved the summer sports. And the winter, they loved skiing. It was winter one year, maybe late January, February, and Megan decided she was ready for summer. I was coming home, and there she was in the middle of the street with her little girlfriends wearing her swimsuit. She was a lot of fun and very busy. Tom and I were gone somewhere once when Michelle was riding a horse and fell and broke her wrist. She was taking keyboarding in middle school and somehow managed to do it with her cast on her wrist. She's amazing.
Along with the busyness of raising 5 kids, Dorothy was a full-time 4th grade teacher.
I went back to teaching again. My mother said, "Don't do it." And I think she was right. I thought I was okay because I thought they were all in school, Megan in kindergarten now. It would all work out. Well, it did. In the end, I think it's okay. But I think it would have been better had I been home and raising my children. But I remember I decided to get my master's so I'd make more money. So I did. I took classes from Utah State University down here. Well, every summer they made you go drive up there to take them up there. I'd leave here at 6 in the morning so I could get there for my 8 o'clock class. And then he gave us work to do, And then I'd be home by 2, and I didn't know where Megan was, and I'd work. And it would be like 6 or 7 at night that I was done. And so then I'd find Megan or something, and then I'd go to bed and get up the next morning. Finally, about the 3rd day of this, I thought, that's it after that class. My daughter's more important. I'm doing this till midnight. I finished the class, but I never got my master's because of it. Teaching is a lot of work. I love teaching in the Jordan District. The children you're with just bring you such joy and such pleasure, as do the parents who are so cooperative and loving. I remember some of the children that I had in school. One boy I was to have in the fall, I was warned by the previous teacher to be careful as he was angry and threw a desk across her classroom. He had ADHD, and so good luck to me. Well, I did have him that year. Sometimes when I could tell he was having a difficult time, I would tell him he could leave the room and run around outside for a minute, and he'd come right back in, and then he'd feel better. I had one little boy that said, "Mrs. Tall, I'm going to be in your class in September, and you must know that I am a very good reader." And you know what? He was, and what a delight he was. Do you know, his grandfather was Elder Packer. I remember one day being tired and thinking, I've taught a lot now. So I went to a meeting on retirement from the Jordan School District. And I thought, okay, let's hear. Maybe I can retire this year, next year. And as I listened to everything, I realized, no, you can't retire this year or next year. And I walked out of there. I was very upset because I wanted to be with Michelle and Megan. And so all of a sudden, a feeling came over me and it said, if you're going to do this, you're going to be the best there ever was. So you do your very best and you're going to be the best teacher. And I said, okay, I'm doing it. And I'm just going to put every ounce of effort I have in it and make it the best years these kids ever had. And I think I did. I was able to write a 4th grade play that covered history that we studied in 4th grade, from the prehistoric to the pioneers and to today. And each child had a part in it. There were lots of singing parts. They played their recorders. There were narrators. They did square dancing. They did pantomiming to a railroad song when the railroad came to Utah. That was probably one of the highlights. I loved working with them on singing, and there's so much reward in teaching school. Letters from parents, letters from students. I remember coming into my classroom one year after school was out, and there was a note on the chalkboard, "Mrs. Tall, you weren't here. I came to see you," from one of my former students in middle school. Things like that just really cheer you up and make you feel good that maybe you did something good for someone. The day I retired, I was in the lunchroom of the school, and my husband came that day, and a lot of teachers were in there, and all of a sudden, here come about 4 high school boys, handsome, tall. They came to see me during that last day of school, and they came to tell me how much they enjoyed having me for their 4th grade teacher. It meant everything to me. I thought that was the sweetest thing they could have ever done.
Over the years, Tom and Dorothy have been on many trips and adventures together. Dorothy's favorite? Their trip to the Holy Land.
Tom loves to travel. He loves to travel, and I do too. So we have seen many, many parts of the world. I think if it hadn't been for Tom, I probably wouldn't have seen some of these places. So I like that for Tom. My most favorite trip in all my life is to Israel. Tom's sister, Samaline, worked for Cleon Scouts, and she said he is taking a group to Israel, and they're doing the dedication of the Orson Hyde Gardens, and all the church leaders are going to be there. One of the most amazing highlights, first of all, was the dedication of the gardens. And Teddy Kolak was there. He was the mayor of Jerusalem at the time. And then we went to church, and that night they said, "Hurry, get on a bus. We're going to go to a special meeting." So that night we went on the tour bus and we walked through these weeds and things, and there were shepherd boys with sheep. I think a Palestinian. It was so cute. And then all of a sudden we came over a little rise, and there we were on the top of a hill, and below us was Bethlehem. And there were these big rocks, and they said, "Sit down." So we sat down, and here comes Spencer W. Kimball and all of the apostles, and they come and they sit down by us, and we have a sacrament meeting up on Shepherd's Hill overlooking Bethlehem. I thought I was in heaven. That was a highlight for sure. Of course, I love being on the Sea of Galilee. We got to go to a Bedouin camp, and that was so amazing and interesting. You walk into their tent, and it is and beautiful and clean, and the rugs, beautiful rugs that we sat on. And then one other thing that I remember in my mind, and that is when Dr. Gannat came on our tour bus, and we got to an army gate, and the soldiers opened the gate, and we went inside, and Dr. Gannat said, "I need to tell you about this place," he said. As the army was excavating this area for their maneuvers and all the training that they do, they came to this cave to bulldoze it down. And this man came running and said, "No, no, you cannot take this down. This is a sacred place for us. This is sacred." And they said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "This is called the Lehi Cave, and it's sacred." And so the army did not bulldoze it down. So when they went in, they found all these writings on the wall of this cave. Jewish scientists and archaeologists checked it all out, and they said, "This is written by a prophet," they could tell, because of the type of writing. And it talks about ships and that the ships are going to go somewhere. And it is dated back to 600 BC.
One place that has become a second home to Tom and Dorothy is Hawaii. It all started decades ago when Tom surprised Dorothy with a trip.
It was the dream to be in Hawaii. We loved the beach as it was, but we thought, oh, Hawaii, that's got to be heaven. And it is. And I remember after Tom and I were married, after Marty was born, some friends of ours and Tom said, "We're taking you women on a vacation, but we're not telling you where we're taking you." And so Alicia, that was her name, and I said, "Oh, I know where we're going. We're going to Tijuana and Baja, California again." And so we brought a swimsuit and a few warm clothes with us, and we go, and they're driving along, I remember. And all of a sudden, I said, "Well, we'll probably go on a bus or a train or something." No. So all of a sudden, we're at the Los Angeles airport, and Tom hands me, he says, "Here's your tickets." And I look at them. I'll never forget. It said Honolulu. I thought I'd pass out. I was so excited. It was beautiful. We saw so much. We saw the Punch Bowl. We saw the side that the Mormon temples on lay. But then we took a little plane trip to one of the other islands. We went to Kauai. And we fell in love with Kauai, and ever since, that's where we go. Once in a while, we'll end up in Maui, but that first time was a dream come true. I was so excited. I'll always remember that.
Another adventure Tom and Dorothy took was their mission to Perth, Australia.
Tom and I often talked about going on a mission. Our children were raised, they were married, and they were doing their thing. And we thought, well, we're home, we should go on a mission. The trouble was Tom was still working, and he didn't want to quit. He was really involved, and things were going well. And so we kind of put that on the back burner. And one day, I got a telephone call. Tom was out walking in the morning, and I was home. I got a call from Bruce Lindsay, who's our neighbor, but he also used to be the news anchor on KSL News in Salt Lake City. And he was called to the Australia Perth mission. And he telephoned us, and he said, "Dorothy, this is Bruce Lindsay. We really could use you and Tom here at the Perth Mission in the office as office missionaries. Would you even consider that?" And I said, "Yes, I would." So that's what happened. Tom came home and I said, "Tom, we've been invited to be missionaries in the Perth, Australia Mission, and I think we should go." And he said, "I do too." And so we did. When I first went there, Tom had about 1 week and a half with the gentleman who worked the finances in the office, and I had about the same time, maybe a little more, with his wife who worked in the office. So she was trying to teach me. So I went there with a little notebook in hand and a pencil, and she said, "Put that away." In that particular tone. And I said, what? And she says, put that notebook and pencil away. You don't need it. You just listen. And so she was very, I don't know, strict, I would say. So I didn't. I had never worked on a computer. And we didn't even get to go to the missionary training center because we didn't have time. He needed us right away. So this was all new to me. And so here she is showing me the different things. And so for a week, okay, I think I've got this. So finally she says, okay, this is my last day with you. So you're going to do it all. So I sat down and she said, now, what do you do first? Well, of course, I knew what to do first. And as I'm thinking, I look out the corner of my eye. I guess she has asthma. She has one of those inhaler and she's inhaling like crazy. And I thought, well, you should have let me take notes. So anyways, it turned out I figured it all out and it was great. And she did things her way. And I had another wonderful woman come in. She was in our ward and she had just come back from being a missionary in the office in New Zealand, in the area office. And she said, Dorothy, why are you doing it that way? I said, well, because so-and-so told me to do it that way. You know, yes, ma'am. And she says, look, what about this? And I says, oh my goodness. She says, don't be afraid to do things your way. As long as you get the job done and you do it. And after that, I was so much more relaxed and it was so much easier. One day I was asked to do something that she hadn't told me about. And I wasn't sure how I was to do it. Here was the deal. Every Monday, the missionaries would write to home to their parents. They would go to the libraries to do this. And if there was a holiday in Australia, all the libraries would be closed. So they would have to wait till the next day. They would have their P day on Tuesday then. Well, President Lindsay came to me and he said, Dorothy, I want you to contact all the parents of all the missionaries and tell them that on Monday, next Monday, the library will be closed because of the holiday, and not to be distraught because they will hear from their missionary the very next day. And I said, okay, thank you, President Lindsay. And I sat down at the computer and thinking, how am I going to do this? So I tried one thing and I tried another thing, and it was the following Monday. So that Monday went by. Tuesday, finally, Friday came by. I had to have it done by Friday. I had to send it off Friday so that the parents would not call President Lindsay. So I went into the little closet and I prayed with all my heart to Heavenly Father. And I told him, this is your work. I need your help. Please help me at this time. And I prayed very hard and very long. No sooner did I come out of that closet after saying amen than this Sister Lane came into the building. Sister Lane was a missionary with her husband. They worked by the University of Western Australia, far away from the office. She never came in. If she did, it was rare. She came in and she said, does anybody here need my help? I have a feeling somebody needs my help. I said, I do. And she sat down she was very good at the computer. And so she sat down at the computer. It took her almost 2 hours. And she said, I've got it now, Dorothy. And so I thanked Heavenly Father. And I was able to get that message off to the parents. And I had that the rest of the time I was there. And I know it's the Lord's work. I know He is with you if you try your hardest. I think the greatest thing on our mission is meeting all the wonderful missionary couples that came to help, the wonderful missionaries, the wonderful people in our ward and other wards that we came to know that became our very dear friends. I love Australia. The water is pristine. The oceans are gorgeous.
Through all the amazing experiences Dorothy's had, the traveling and the teaching, she would say what's most important to her is her family and the gospel of Jesus Christ.
I love my children, and they love me and Tom, and they love each other. In this point in our lives, we're happy. Everyone seems to be doing well, and we've lived a long life together through all kinds of happiness and sadness, just like life is. And the older you get, the closer you grow together, and the more important the gospel means to you. Oh, I know this is the true church. I am so grateful for my grandparents who joined the church. I cannot thank them enough. My brother baptized me when I was 8. That was a wonderful thing, and grew into the church and realizing the importance of it. And I'm so grateful for the gospel in my life. I cannot imagine my life without it. I'm grateful for the Holy Ghost that has visited me more than once in my life, who has helped me through some times that were very difficult. I'm grateful that I can rely on the Lord, that He answers prayers, not always the way we think, but He answers them. I put my trust in Him. I love my family. I'm so grateful for them. I'm grateful for the temple and the promises that are made there and the covenants. I'm grateful for everything I have. I give my thanks to Heavenly Father. I know I have been blessed and watched over throughout my life.
As you've heard throughout Dorothy's story, she is classy, well-spoken, and makes the people around her feel loved. Her beauty and kindness are radiant. She's given her all to her students, her family, and to Jesus Christ. A big thank you to Tom and Dorothy Tall for purchasing their episodes. If there's somebody that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website at hearingourheritage.com.